Buccaneers fans, here he is, the sage of Tampa Bay sports on the Ira Kaufman podcast, and he is Ira Kaufman. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeCamper of JoeBucksFan is here, and all the fun is presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford. You can find them at BillCurryFord.com. GM Sean Sullivan has so many great offers going on, and they're only going to get even better and stronger as they always do. BillCurryFord.com is where you can learn about their nationwide lifetime warranty on new and used vehicles. You can also hear about how they give you a $500 gift card just for ordering a new vehicle. It's all right there at JoeBucksFan.com as well. You can click on the link there if you want to. They make it so easy to order a vehicle. They have their certified used vehicle program, which is just fantastic, Ira. Low financing on that, as low as 0.99%. Check out all of the inventory at BillCurryFord.com.
BillCurryFord.com.
And Sage, we thank Big Storm Beer, the official beer of the Ira Kaufman podcast, the official home of wild and crazy and overflow crowd watch parties in the morning when the Bucks play overseas, and Florida's Elite Restoration. That is your first phone call whenever you have a disaster in your business or your home, flood, mold, water damage. Call them 24/7. They're going to respond.
Florida's Elite Restoration. .com. Florida's Elite Restoration.com.
Ira, it's been a very interesting week. It doesn't feel like a bye week, Ira, because you had a bagel with Bruce Arians, and then you wrote it up. And what do we need to know about you hanging out with Bruce Arians, Ira?
Well, Steve, while you're handing out the thank yous, I want to send out a thank you to Bruce Arians for providing a little juice during a bye week when usually, you know, it's the dead week on the schedule and there's no transactions and you don't get any injury updates and anything like that. And Buck players scatter to the wind. And here comes Bruce Arians, Lee, agreeing to sit down with me on Monday, a very relaxed Bruce Arians. Lee, right off the bat, I want to address this point, and I think it needs clarification. And, you know, Lee, like you, I read the comments underneath the Joe Bucks fan stories, and then we get a lot of comments, and we appreciate that, all points of view. But I think there's a little bit of a misunderstanding. Some people interpreted Arians' comments about Tom Brady and how he was playing during the tailspin, that Arians was blaming Tom Brady for losing five, you know, games out of six. He was not doing that. Lee, what he was saying was Brady was part of the problem for part of that tailspin. I don't have any problem with that. He prefaced it by saying nobody's going to say this about Tom Brady. I think he's right about that. You know, you listen to some other podcasts or read some other site stories, you're never going to hear a peep about Tom Brady struggling, even for a game or a quarter or whatever. You're just not going to hear it, but you're going to hear it here. But other than that, you know, he gets off scot-free. Lee, you score 3 points in Charlotte. I don't care if Mike Evans dropped a touchdown or not. You know, there was another 59 minutes in that game, and they scored 3 points. So are you going to absolve the quarterback, any quarterback, of any blame when you go out and score 3 points against the team whose owner didn't even want to win the game, Lee? So I'm not trying to defend Bruce Arians, but I'm trying to explain that he wasn't trying to say that Brady was more responsible than anybody else, but you can't absolve the quarterback for offensive doldrums, Lee. I got no problem with what Arians said.
I'm torn on this because I guess if you say Brady wasn't playing the way we expect Brady to play, if that's struggling, well, okay. Statistically, he was not struggling whatsoever. He was doing just fine. And I still firmly believe, I know Arians, it looked like he got a little emotional in your article about this. I still believe his handpicked guy to run the offense was Exhibit A, what was wrong with the Bucs offense. I mean, especially Pittsburgh, that was ridiculous. To me, struggling is Mitch Trubisky. That's struggling. Was he peak Brady? Probably not. But I don't think he was the reason for it. I don't think he was the guy at fault. Guy at fault was the person who's supposed to have an idea what he's doing. Supposed to have an idea, you have to attack a weakness on a defense. And see, I can go on and on. Yeah, predictability. That was my only issue. Like,
I just think you're being too kind to number 12. He's a big boy. He can handle it.
I want a coach, if he thinks so-and-so is playing rotten, I want him to say that. I respect, admire, and embrace candor. If he thinks Brady sucked, well, number one, I'd like to see what he was talking about, what he means by that. But I want candor. I crave candor. I have no issue whatsoever him calling out any player. I don't care if it's Tom Brady or Russ Cockrell.
Steve, when you're averaging 15 points, you know, whatever it was during that 6 weeks period, and that might be being kind, you got to talk about the quarterback at some point. You do.
I agree with you. And, you know, we look at everything here under a microscope, and our general assessment was he's not on an MVP track here, but he's playing pretty well and well enough where he's really not the problem. Arians seemed to think that he was playing worse than most people assessed, and certainly the perception out there, because Arians, we know, firsthand reads everything, you know, and he was probably reading Lee every day saying, get Leftwich out of here, this guy's ridiculous, you know, so we know that. But my question to you is, Ira, is when Arians said, quote, to you, nobody is going to say that Brady was playing bad, but he was playing bad. Who was he referring to? Was he referring to people inside one buck, right? Is Todd Bowles not going up to Brady and saying, hey, man, we got to get your game together. What do we need here? You're not playing well. Is Byron Leftwich being candid with Brady as to the quality of his play in the way that Bruce Arians thinks is acceptable? That's the question here, I think. Is everybody a yes man to Tom Brady at one buck? Is that what Arians was saying? Was he just saying that the media is not going to call him out and say that he's playing poorly? I wasn't sure what the gray area there is and what it all means.
Steve, what struck me immediately when he said it, maybe I'm misinterpreting it, but what struck me, Lee, was I think he was talking primarily about the media, local media, national media. He reads everything, Lee. We know that, unlike some of these coaches who say, oh, I never read anything. He does. And I thought, and I still do, I don't think he was talking about conversations that were going on inside the building. I don't think he was slapping Bowles around for not criticizing Brady in public, because that's dangerous for a head coach to do that. I thought he was talking about the national media treating Brady with kid gloves, which by and large they do, Lee.
Oh, yeah.
Arians also said a couple other things to you. Also, he sat down with Dan Pompey of The Athletic for a feature that popped right after yours. And we know how the business works. That means Pompey was probably sitting on it and The Athletic were sitting on the story and were probably planning to run it over the bye week, you know, maybe this weekend or on Monday of next week, a big feature kind of thing to spark Bucks fans a little bit on the bye week. And Arians probably said, I'll let you do this feature, but you have to do it, post it on the bye week. I don't want to detract from the team. So they hustled up their publication probably because they were like, oh, geez, what else does Ira have that we're going to get scooped on, sort of. And, of course, Arians had the health scare that you reported, 4 days in Tampa General Hospital. You know, Arians shared that information. And your sit-down and The Athletic piece really highlighted Arians' role on a day-to-day basis at one buck, because he told you that during the rough patch of football there by the Bucks, and presumably before that and all the time, he said that he talks to Byron Leftwich daily. Now, they're not talking about their kids daily. They're talking about X's and O's and plays and football and what the F we got to change. And Arians probably going crazy. He also said that the reason he told Dan Pompey, the reason he doesn't sit in the press box is because he doesn't want the press to see his emotion and interpret it as how angry he is at Todd Bowles or at a play call, which I thought was fascinating. And it makes all the sense in the world because, yeah. Because, you know, imagine a 3rd-and-2 call and Arians doesn't like it and he's just dropping a bunch of F-bombs. you and I would look at...
You would.
Yeah, you and I on a road game or something, we'd look at that and be like, oh my gosh, Arians couldn't believe that Bowles went for it on fourth down there or punted and called him a pussy, you know? So it's really a fascinating situation there. But he is very involved on a day-to-day basis. And yeah, he told Pompey next year he won't be there every day, but that doesn't mean he won't literally be almost as involved again. It's very interesting, Ira.
Steve, it'd be very naive for any of us to think, and we know Bruce Arians and we know his relationships. Lee, how naive would it be to think that during those 6 weeks when the Bucs lost five times and they slipped to 3-5, things looked dire, and Leftwich was getting pilloried, and not just by you, Lee, but you were a leading voice, and you know, I don't think you were necessarily off base during that time, that Leftwich kind of needs to be removed, get rid of him in midstream. It's naive to think that Arians is watching all this unfold and Leftwich get buried, local media, national media, television, and he's going to sit back and let it happen and not try to help Leftwich, not just with the X's and O's, but to try to keep him on an even keel and not to let him get demoralized. This is his guy, Lee. You know, he got Bowles a job directly. And now he's trying to help Leftwich. And he told me, you know, during the offseason, he's going to try to, you know, pump up the volume on Leftwich, which, Lee, that seems laughable about 3 weeks ago. Laughable.
Laughable right now.
Yeah, that anybody would consider. Well, Lee, the offense didn't look bad in Munich. Not bad.
Well, you know, like I always say, winning is the greatest perfume. And I wrote a story, you know, I don't know what it is about Leftwich running to the left, which is not the strength of the offensive line. And if you look at Rashard White's run chart, I'd say like 70, 75% of his runs were to the left, and he didn't do squat. In fact, he lost yards on one run. But when he ran right, he was excellent. And it's like, hello.
Lee,
I mean, a high school coach would get his ass chewed out for that, much less an NFL offensive coordinator. I just don't get Leftwich. And, of course, Leftwich has been asked several times, why do you keep running left when you got an all-pro right tackle? And he always comes out with a standard dodge. Well, I call plays to give us the best chance to win. No, you're not.
Steve, that's what we love about the Kemper on this podcast and being a prominent member of Joe Bucks fan. That's what we love, Steve, is that after a day where they run 44 times for a buck 60, Lee DeKemper's breaking down the running game, you know, play by play, where they're going with the ball and what the results are. Steve, only DeKemper would do that.
Well, no, I mean, it's reality. Look, Leftwich hasn't done a good job this season. You know, it's just that simple. It's a lot of season left, a lot of time to fix stuff. But as far as the perception of him as a head coach candidate, I think he is a good head coach candidate because I'm trying to take the emotion out of it. When you look at other guys who get head coaching jobs, I mean, look at Arthur Smith. Was he tearing the world on fire with a modern offense in Tennessee? No, he was a young guy who they thought was a good leader. And had some success, and you know, they liked his coaching pedigree, and they hired him in Atlanta. And so
he got to the playoffs with Ryan Tannehill. That's a monumental task.
Well, you get a Hall of Fame running back and an excellent defense. I get it, but I'm just saying that some might perceive that he doesn't have a better resume than Byron Leftwich did.
Artie Smith, he had Atlanta in a freaking playoff run with Marcus Mariota.
Well, I don't know.
I mean, I'd take it. I mean, he is light years better than Byron Leftwich. What do you think Leftwich would do with Mariota at quarterback? I mean, come on.
Yeah, but no, but he didn't get the job. He didn't get the job before he had Mariota at 4-5. I mean, he got the job on his previous resume. All I'm saying is that he had a very powerful head coach. The perception of, hey, Leftwich has done some good things. He got a year out of Jameis, who now they don't even like him in New Orleans. And he's a young guy, and he's got Arians and good influence. He's got some good ideas. And there are worse head coaching candidates than guys with Super Bowl rings who've been around great players and who you could make the argument that Leftwich is a good candidate to develop a franchise quarterback if you're starting over. I'm just saying other teams might look at it that way. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've been fair with Leftwich. I always bring up he is the only offensive coordinator in the history of the game to have two different quarterbacks throw for 5,000 yards. One is a guy that people cannot stand. Another is a guy who was in his 40s. That's remarkable. But the proof is in the pudding, as I like to say. And this year, what he has done with this offense, up until last week, they had the worst rushing attack since before the Super Bowl existed, or the merger existed, I mean, by that standard, Marcus Arroyo needs to come back.
Hey, Sage, important question for you. Let's turn it back to the Sage here.
There we go.
Do you think that Byron Leftwich wanted to play Rashad White earlier, and maybe Todd Bowles said, no, we're sticking with Lenny?
No, I don't think that's the case at all, Steve. I take Bowles at his word. He doesn't try to orchestrate the offense. He's not hanging over Leftwich's shoulder. I take him as his word. It's Leftwich's call, and I don't think there was that kind of disagreement between the head coach and the offensive coordinator. I think Bowles has enough confidence in Leftwich. Sorry, Lee, for you to hear that. But I think Bowles has enough confidence in him to let him make the decisions, as he should, And, you know, who knows what Jason Light was thinking all that time. But Jason Light's not going to overrule Byron Leftwich. If Light thought that White should have got more carries, he's going to stay quiet. And it's Leftwich's call, so I don't agree with that, Steve. I think it's all Leftwich's decision.
That's
and
fine.
Going forward, I think it's White's job to lose.
Wait, I got another question for you, Ira, and I want to make sure. I just asked you a question. I don't have an opinion on it. I don't know. Just wanted to put that out there. And you mentioned Bowles being over Leftwich's shoulder. There's no room there. Arians is parked there in his Mercedes. There's no room there. One thing that Arians told Dan Pompey of The Athletic, and I know a lot of fans don't read The Athletic because it's behind a paywall and it's not that popular because you got to pay for it and it's kind of long and boring. But deep in that story was a line from Arians saying, I still spend a lot of time with Tom Brady, but not as much as probably I used to. In 1 week, we maybe spend an hour talking about football and another hour talking about life. Now, that would stick a big old dagger in the prevailing thought that's out there by a lot of people that Brady and Arians don't like each other, or that Brady ran Arians out of town and Arians is mad about it. Arians is sitting there saying that they spend 2 hours a week chatting. I'm going to ask you, what do you think of that? And do you think that Bowles and Brady spend 2 hours a week chatting?
Steve, we got to put that narrative to bed. We've tried to do that for months on this podcast. It's not even worth discussing anymore. I mean, I think it's been debunked. I know some prominent media members still believe it, that there was a huge friction between Arians and Brady, and Brady's the prime reason why Arians stepped down. At this point, we see no evidence of that. In fact, we see a lot of evidence of the contrary. I've been told they sit next to each other on team planes, on buses. Read into that what you want. He's got a $30,000 watch from Brady. Read into that what you want. They talk all the time. Brady does not dislike Bruce Arians as a person or as a head coach. Tom Brady had a lot of success. Tom Brady's got a ring with Bruce Arians. I didn't believe that story from the onset, Lee. I think you were a little more open to it. Not that you necessarily bought into it. I just think it's been debunked. And some people are clinging to it like a life raft. I just don't think it's got much merit to it at all. I don't put any stock into that.
I absolutely agree with you in a sense, Ira, that to use your word, it's been debunked. It's been debunked. I mean, look at the offense right now. If Brady wanted Leftwich over Arians, then you really got to question Brady's football intellect. And I don't think anybody's going to question that guy's football intellect. If anything, people want that more of the red pen.
Yes.
Hey, Ira, I just for the record, I do want to say that Tom Brady buying somebody a $30,000 watch is like the equivalent of me buying you two sandwiches and a donut. You know, I don't know if that means.
Or as David Lee Roth said, a bottle of anything and a glazed donut to go.
There you go.
Well, Steve, I got to mention that at Big Storm, you picked up the check, including my Ira Kaufman breakfast. So. Oh. You know, in front of 150 Buck fans that turned out at Big Storm. So well done, Steve. Well done.
So there you go. So now the myth that we don't get along is debunked. There you go. Sage, we talked about it before, and we need to know it all. Florida's Elite Restoration, they are your first phone call if you find mold in your home or water damage, flood, fire damage, storm damage, whatever it might be. You call Florida's Elite Restoration immediately, 24/7. They'll be there to help you. and they'll give you a free assessment of what's going on in your property. They do fantastic work, and they also know how to work with insurance companies, and that is so critical. Owner Josh Martin has 14 years experience as an insurance adjuster, so he's going to make sure it's navigated properly and you don't get ripped off. Florida's Elite Restoration Sage, they've got $500 for your listeners. All you got to do is mention Joe Bucks Fan or Ira Kaufman when you call. They'll come out and give you a free assessment. If you move forward with an agreement to do some work that you need done, they will give you $500 back. Maybe that's money you use toward your deductible with your insurance company, or just $500 off. Florida'sElitereStoration.com. Put that website in your favorites, in your phone. That's your first phone call when you have a problem. Don't get ripped off. Get a free assessment. Florida'sElitereStoration.com. Hey, Ira, another thing that happened in the, you know, just to close that out, Dan Pompey noted that, which you already knew, that Arians sits in meetings with these offensive meetings. So if Brady ran the guy and all of a sudden he's sitting in the offensive meeting speaking up on third down packages, I mean, it doesn't make any sense anymore. So I think that's gone as far as a thing to talk about. You never know the truth, exactly how this played out or what the emotions were at the time. But it sure doesn't seem that way. Question for you, Ira. There's an opening after this season in Indianapolis. Bruce Arians is close with Jim Irsay. You know he's going to call Irsay and say, you got to interview Leftwich. This is why I'm vouching for the guy. And you know Irsay is going to say to Bruce Arians, well, Bruce, if I hired Byron, if I like him, are you coming with him? Are you going to help him out? Am I going to get Bruce Arians like Tampa has Bruce Arians? You going to come here and help it out? Am I going to get Tom Moore in here too? What's going on? What do you think Arians says if Irsay sort of eventually puts it out there that says, if I get you, Bruce, I'll hire Byron?
That's a very interesting scenario, Steve. I hadn't thought of that. If that would guarantee Leftwich gets that job, I think Arians would consider it and perhaps pull Tom Moore along with them. Tom Moore, God bless him. I didn't know the guy comes in 3:30 in the morning. I mean, that's unbelievable.
Yeah.
But, Lee, I think ultimately Arians is so committed to seeing his guys get opportunities. And after Leftwich, there's going to be other guys, you know, Goodwin and other guys on the staff that Arians is committed to. Now, look, I don't know how Go and Andy would sit with Christine, who, by the way, I didn't mention this in the story. She's just had her second knee replacement.
Oh.
So Arians is doting on her, you know, like a see-at-home doctor. You know, when he leaves the facility, he goes right home and tries to take care of Christine. I don't know how that would go over with her. They're very comfortable in Tampa. They got the Georgia house. But, Lee, you know how committed Arians is, and he proved it. He proved it, Lee, by stepping down from a team that had Tom Brady, and there was no reason to think they weren't going 12-5 and would be a viable contender for a Super Bowl. And Arians decides, no, this is a way to get Todd Bowles this job. So there's no telling how far he'd go to get Leftwich landing with another team.
That's a great point Steve brought up. And Ira, you just brought up something that, I mean, just on a personal level, I feel awful about. Was Arians' wife going through rehab or surgery about the same time he had his heart issue?
I think it happened after he got out of the hospital and was given the green light that everything was fine.
Okay, and then she had her surgery.
Then this is her second knee replacement. And that's a big deal, Lee.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, that would have been awful. He's in the hospital, she's in the hospital.
Steve, I got to ask Lee a question. We're not going to spend much time on it. This is a Buck podcast, Lee. It's not a Saints podcast. But, Lee, are you as shocked as I am, confused as I am over this Jameis Winston situation in New Orleans? I just can't get over it. Lee, I don't know. I don't know if Winston did something wrong while he was rehabbing his injuries. I don't know if he's got a personality conflict with Dennis Allen. Lee, if he's not healthy, why is he dressing every week and backing up Andy Dalton? And Lee, what does it mean for Jameis Winston's future? And how do we look at this guy? Is he's not young anymore? Been in this league a long time. Lee, can we call Jameis Winston a bust?
I could never call a guy who threw for 5,000 yards a bust. To me, a definition of a bust is a guy that's thoroughly inept. Josh Rosen springs to mind. as a bust. I mean, someone that has no business being on the field, that's a bust to me. I guess Jameis' career is over. I don't understand it. I'm like you, Ira. Maybe there's possibly something happened behind the scenes. Could be a personality issue with Dennis Allen. We know defensive coaches are just so paranoid about picks. And my theory on picks is play defense. Terry Bradshaw threw picks. He's got how many rings? Four. Fran Tarkenton threw picks. He's in the Hall of Fame. Joe Namath threw picks. He's in the Hall of Fame. So I just don't buy this neon philosophy that picks will lose you games. No, bad defense loses you games. Not scoring loses you games.
Steve, is Winston at this point destined to be a backup somewhere for the next 5 or 6 years? Is that it?
Two things. One, in New Orleans, we all know who Mike Triplett is, longtime Saints reporter. He went out on his own. He's working for an outlet called NewOrleans.football. And Triplett did a long sit-down with Jameis that published, basically, Jameis opened up, and it was the kind of interview that a cancer in the locker room would do. If you want to be divisive, you sit down and do this tremendously open interview about maybe you shouldn't have played in week two and, you know, looking for someone to cry to that it's not going your way. It wasn't the most unifying thing for Jameis to do. I think that there were some issues with that at the organization. I'm not going to get into the whole interview, but there's something going on there. And whatever that is, I don't know. As far as Jameis the player, when he was here in Tampa, we all saw what happened as far as picks. It was just so historic. I mean, we're on yet another season right now where the guys throwing the ball away in the NFL, no one's going to throw 20 picks this year. So that 30 was exceptional, and I think that it's going to hurt him, his chances to get on the field again as a starter.
The saga of Jameis Winston, I mean, it's quite a book. It's quite a book, lady.
there's Naira's next project.
the ups and downs. And, you know, they gave him a big two-year contract in March. They did. Oh. And for him to sit behind Andy Dalton and Lee, we don't have to pick apart Andy Dalton.
Yeah, I'm not really crying over that, but I see what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah.
the slimy Saints.
The Saints deserve all this. Ira, very important stuff. Coming from Clyde Christensen on the Buccaneers Radio Network. Very important stuff. Two key things that the Sage and everybody need to know. Number one, Christensen painted a picture of Tom Brady just being completely dialed in as far as sitting down constantly with Hainsey and watching extra film with the offensive linemen and working with these guys, and how Tom Brady got together with Todd Bowles and said, we got to change practice. We got to make it more intense because I need more time at full speed with these receivers to build chemistry. And the practices have been ratcheted up the last few weeks. And no more half speed, Brady said, and more competition. And they agreed that they'd make practice more competitive instead of what you saw more of, he said, in 2021 when it was like, hey, you know, we know what to do. We're a veteran team. We're all coming back. We're all good. And lastly, Ira, Christensen talked about how Tom Brady absolutely is improving and that he's better and that he is not tapering his practice routine at all. And they've been trying to get him to stop working on deep shots on Fridays, worried about his arm. Christensen even joked that he's like, I can see it now. My legacy in the league is that I was the idiot quarterback coach who let Tom Brady work on 65-yarders and fly patterns on Fridays because I can't stop him. He won't listen to me. And I'll be looked at as like, well, what were you doing? The guy's 45. You're an idiot. You ruined Tom Brady. But they can't stop him and that he's just as dialed in as ever and that they basically painted a picture of how much he loves to play, but more important, how much he loves to practice and that he's actually improving. And he said everything everywhere sounds like this guy's playing football next year. Ira, what am I missing?
You're not missing a damn thing. Not a damn thing. Lee, my takeaway from both of those interview points with Christensen is very simple. Lee, and I know you're going to agree with me finally on this podcast about something. My takeaway is this. Bravo to the coaching staff for not having so much ego that you can't let a player dictate what he wants to do. And by that, I mean, Lee, normally I wouldn't allow that, but it's Tom freaking Brady. I said it before you did, Lee. Lee, if Tom Brady wants to change the practice regimen, and I'm Todd Bowles on offense, I'm saying do what you want to do. And if I'm Leftwich, go for it, Tom. It's Tom Brady. There's nobody like him, Lee. There's nobody to compare him to. This ain't Kirk Cousins telling the coach, I want to, you know, practice for an extra hour and do it this way. And when it comes to offensive football and philosophy and trying to take advantage of situations and working with young players, I say go for it. Do what you want to do. And as far as Brady throwing long passes in practice when I'm trying to save his own, who knows Tom Brady's body better than the man himself? So I have complete trust in Brady in terms of preparation, practice regimen. I say bravo to the coaching staff to yield to a player like no other.
You know, you hit the nail on the head there with Ira's ego. The one thing I've learned, you know, since Steve and I launched JoeBucksFan.com is never underestimate egos in the NFL. And so, you know, the fact that, as you stated, the coaches didn't let their egos get ahead of them and they listened to Brady, that says a lot.
And it's an acknowledgement, Lee, that there's never been a guy like him.
For a lot of reasons, yes.
Bill Curry Ford. Thank you, Bill Curry Ford. 1 mile north of Raymond James Stadium on the east side, BillCurryFord.com. That's the home of the nationwide lifetime warranty on new and used vehicles. Bill Curry Ford. Shop there first. Sean Sullivan, the GM, is going to help you personally if you want him to. He's going to give you the Ira Kaufman discount. He makes it easy. BillCurryFord.com. And our thanks to Big Storm Beer. Try Big Storm if you haven't yet. This is the time you're going to be the hit of your Thanksgiving day football watching and table if you pick up some Big Storm beer at your local store or at one of their tap rooms. The Wavemaker Amber Ale is their original. It's fantastic. The Bromosa, their tangerine IPA, is top shelf. That is the top seller. Sunny Key Lime, Tropical Pressure, Florida Ale, or Golden Ale. I always forget. Doesn't really matter. Tropic Pressure. So many great Big Storm beers, bigstormbrewery.com. Find their tap rooms in Clearwater, Odessa, Cape Coral, Orlando at the Amway Center. Big Storm Beer is Florida's best craft beer, brewed locally, of course.
Okay, Sage, now as far as the Bucks and where they sit here, you know, we've had more time to digest it. We know the schedule. We know all the ins and outs. Do you feel that they're basically in a situation here where they are in the perfect situation? I mean, I don't know how else to put it to you. Are they in the driver's seat? Are they good enough? Have we seen enough where we're able to just believe that they're going to be able to cruise through this thing? Or do you need to see a lot more? How many games do you need to see until you believe that this team is a powerful contender?
I think things are pretty rosy at the moment. I thought they played a very, you know, well-balanced game in Munich. To me, that was a 21-3 game, not a 21-16 game. By the middle of the first quarter, I didn't have any feeling that the Bucks could lose that game. They were that dominant, I felt, in the trenches. It was good to see that kind of physicality. They bullied Seattle, which is not easy. You know, I know they're 5-5. They might lose another couple of games. You know, I think they'll finish 10-7 at this point, which is less than I predicted at the start of the season. But who saw them going 3-5, you know, after 8 games. So I say keep an eye on Seattle if I'm a Buck fan, because I don't think the number 3 seed's out of reach. It seems like 1 and 2 are going to be Philly and Minnesota. You never know, but I mean, they're way ahead of the Bucks at this point. So then the Bucks maybe could play the 6th team. Maybe they play the Giants. Could be Dallas, something like that. You know, sitting number 3, it's a home playoff game. I think the Bucks would be favored no matter who they're playing. Against that 6th seed, could be San Francisco, could be, although I think the Niners will win that division. I think things are rosy, Lee. They're getting healthy. Julio Jones showed a burst, Lee, that was totally unexpected for me. I didn't think he would score a touchdown on that play. I thought he'd get down at the, you know, the 12-yard line and get tackled, but he didn't. Godwin looks a little bit better. Mm-hmm. Rashad White, been a breath of fresh air. Leverett's playing well at left guard.
Antoine Winfield's back. Lee, I thought Joe Tryon-Stoyinka played a very strong game in Seattle. I noticed him on a lot of plays. I thought he was very disruptive. Akeem Hicks's presence has helped. Special teams looks very good. I mean, suck up. Kamara's been strong. Darden's playing better. Lee, there's a lot of reasons for optimism at 5-5. That doesn't mean the Bucs are going to be favored to represent the NFC. They're not. They're not the favorites because they're 5-5, and they got to go through a gauntlet. But they've done it before. Bye week came at a good time. I'm not worried about the Cleveland Browns. They got a couple of tough games the rest of the way, but I don't know. I think Buck fans are feeling a lot better.
Then they should. That was an impressive game the Bucs had. Here's my angle on Hicks, Ira. I've written this many times, so has Steve. We don't believe in coincidences in the NFL. And I wrote a story Thursday morning on JoeBucksFan.com. You know, Devin White had that awful game against Baltimore. Warren Sapp was saying he needs to have the C ripped off his chest. Ian Beckles was outraged. And it was not a good look and not a good game for Devin White. All of a sudden, Devin White, the last two games, has been the Devin White we expected, pretty much all over the place. Well, what also has happened? Akeem Hicks came back to the lineup. He's healthy. And I remember after that Baltimore game, Wade Phillips stuck up for Devin White, and he broke down film for the 33rd team. He stuck up for White. He said that Vita Vea wasn't doing anything to disrupt Tyler Linderbaum, the center for the Baltimore Ravens. Vea wasn't doing anything to keep him off of Devin White. And Wade Phillips said a quick 300-pound center is going to win a one-on-one matchup with a 240-pound linebacker every play. And we saw all the plays, how Linderbaum just absolutely took out Devin White. Well, now you got Hicks there. All of a sudden, those centers are off Devin White. Devin White's able to roam. And look what Devin White has done in the past couple games. I don't think, and I know it's not a coincidence. So things are pointing up for the Bucs, as to use a favorite Team Glazer saying. The arrow is pointing up. They're getting healthy. It's November. It's a good time to get healthy. And I think we're starting to see the results of this health. Am I saying they're going to make them run to the Super Bowl? No. But as Shireen Williams, your buddy, Ira, who you used to work with, she's with Mike Florio now at Pro Football Talk, as she stated earlier this week, nobody is going to want to face Tom Brady in the playoffs.
That's always the case. You know, Steve, the Rams did nothing on the ground against the Bucs, but I said, so what, Steve? So what? The Rams can't run the ball. I mean, now I think they're the worst rushing team. I think they're below the Bucs. So that didn't prove anything to me in terms of a Buck run defense, Steve, that's been very, very erratic this season, atypically erratic. But, Steve, then you go to Munich and you shut down Kenneth Walker, who by all accounts is a heck of a rookie running back. Was averaging 5 yards a pop, and he had nowhere to run, Steve, nowhere. So that's much more impressive than stopping Cam Akers and Darrell Henderson to me. That's a real foothold to hold on to.
All right, Sage. Well, look, we got it out of you. 5-2 is what you're predicting the rest of the way. You know, we'll see what plays out. There's really no reason the Bucs can't do it. And 10-7 may be good enough for the 3 seed. It's going to depend a lot on if they can beat San Francisco and all those things. Let me hit up Lee here. Lee, as we close out the podcast, you're in Germany, and we'll talk more about this in the next podcast, Sage, because, you know, the Bucks have time off. We'll hit even more on Germany. I'm curious, Lee, what you can tell the fans about Team Glazer hanging out in public, mingling with the fans and taking pictures, I'm sure, and being out there. That's rare stuff for ownership to be out there like that.
You know, I ran into them at the Hofbräuhaus chance encounter. So there was Brian Glazer. He's doing selfies with fans. He's sitting in the beer hall at one of the beer tables. And that's actually a big, long bench, like 25 feet long. And you know, fans are coming up to him. He's, you know, pressing flesh with them. I guess one guy hugged him, and he was very open. He was very, I don't know, animated. It was a great atmosphere. The It was really something. I got a video of the scene at the Hofbrau House. You had these Oompa bands running through the freaking beer hall, and people are doing conga lines behind the band. It was pretty wild. You see people pounding the tables like a drum beat to the band. They're pounding the tables and yelling Prost, which is German for cheers. And they have their leader mugs. And in Germany, having a cold one ain't what it is in America. You're drinking liter mugs, liters of beer. And for those who don't know, a liter is a quart. So there's no pints, there's no 12-ounce cans. You're pounding liters. And they were enjoying it. I spoke with Brian briefly, and at first I told him, I said, I'm not gonna publish this at all. He goes, I don't care, I'm here with the fans. And so I can tell you, he was over the moon with the reception the Bucks got as a team in Munich. Now, mind you, this is before the game. This is the night before the game. He couldn't believe the red carpet that the Germans rolled up for him. He was genuinely blown away by the reception the locals gave the Bucks. Brian Glaze, like, look around, look at this place. This is awesome. And he was absolutely over the top, ecstatic about everything about it. And I wouldn't be shocked if he, at some point, would be lobbying the NFL to go back. He was having that good of a time. He was that impressed with the hospitality the Germans offered up. No doubt in my mind, there's going to be a lot more than one game a year in Germany. They're going to have maybe two games, maybe more. That was a slam dunk by the locals to get the NFL there, and they exceeded, I think, the NFL's expectations.
Lee, did you run into more Seattle fans or Buck fans during the week?
There were a lot of Seattle fans, but I know you brought this up with Russo. At the game, if you're talking about how many fans were there, there's no way really to tell. I was just going by the volume. And the volume, the Bucks were louder. Now, that could be, if you sit in different parts of a stadium, your sense of who's louder is different. And so it could be there was louder Seattle fans. It could be there was more Seattle fans. I was just judging by when the teams took the field. Like, from where I was sitting, the Bucks fans, if there were less Bucks fans, they were certainly louder. It was like a college bowl game. It was like going to the sold-out Orange Bowl. Or an Outback Bowl, like when it meant something and Michigan played South Carolina. I never experienced a regular season atmosphere, like middle of the regular season, like that was.
Lee, how much of the euphoria surrounding the game do you attribute to the fact that it was the first one? It's a novelty. Do you think they'll maintain that for future games that come to Germany?
That's a great unknown. Like I said earlier, I really believe the NFL was taken aback by the reception and the reactions, the way they just threw out the red carpet. Everybody embraced them. Everybody welcomed them. I talked to some of the locals, even the ones that have, they don't know Brady. They don't know the NFL, but they thought it was cool that the NFL was coming to Munich. They thought that was really neat from a community perspective. I talked to a guy who has been at Bucks games in London, and he went to the Bucks game in Munich. And he said the atmosphere and the reaction, everything about it, was far superior in Munich. And obviously, TV ratings in Europe, the Germans have the highest TV ratings for the NFL than they do in anywhere in Europe. And I didn't know this, but apparently every Sunday, a German network broadcasts two NFL games. I was not aware of that. I heard Peter King say that.
Lee, did you come across anybody at all during your week that realized that you work for Joe Buck's fan or started talking to you about Joe Buck's fan?
One guy's name, I'll drop another guy's name online. A gentleman by the name of Mike Luker. I've never met him before. I ran into him at a museum in Munich, and he looked like a very suave gentleman, maybe in his 50s, very, well-dressed, well-groomed, everything, very classy-looking guy. And he couldn't believe that I was Joe Buck's fan, or half of it. And he's like, hey, and he gets his wife's attention, hey, this is Joe Buck's fan. And his wife was telling me he's got it rigged on his cell phone. The only thing he has to do is type the letter J and the website pops up.
Fantastically. How did he get to know that you work for Joe Buck's fan? I mean, did you just during the conversation?
I struck up a conversation with him. I saw him in Munich, and obviously, stranger in a strange land. And I'm in this fabulous, fabulous museum in Munich. It was about, you know, Munich's role. I give them credit for doing this. It's a city-owned museum to remember Munich's role in the rise of the Nazis and all the crimes that they committed. There's not a whole lot of World War II remembrances in Munich for obvious reasons, but I give them credit. This museum just blew me away how good it was, and everything in it was bilingual. At any rate, I ran into the guy there. The guy was wearing a Bucks cap. And as we were leaving the museum, you know, we parted ways in the museum, and he said, "Have fun watching the left, which called run plays up the middle."
You know, do me a favor, Lee, as a courtesy, and take a minute or two and just describe your trip on the day before the game to a concentration camp and the emotions that that filled you during that visit.
Oh, wow. There's not a whole lot to say about it because it speaks for itself. I went to Dachau, and I didn't take the full tour, but I went to the main elements of the place where the massacres, the genocide. Now, what can you say? I walked through the showers. I can't describe my emotions, but I say this, you can call me nuts. You can. I didn't have one drop of alcohol in me. You can call me nuts. You can call me crazy, whatever. But walking through those showers, I swear to you, there was a hum. There was a low hum in those showers. And I thought to myself, is that the voices of thousands that can no longer speak?
I can't imagine the scene.
And when I walked into place, I didn't walk through the gate. I got a picture. You know, those cynical words, work will make you free. But when I walked out, the gate was open. I walked out that gate and I was thinking, how many thousands never got that opportunity?
That's an experience of a lifetime, Lee.
When I went there, it was a sunny day when I took off from Munich. Dachau is a suburb of Munich. It's like Plant City, Tampa. You go through a little bit of farmland and you're there. When I got there, it was like Schindler's List in real life. What I mean by that was it went from a sunny day to dark, cold, foggy, overcast. It was like a black and white movie in real life. And it was the perfect weather for such a heinous place.
As it should be, Lee, as it should be. It shouldn't be a sunny day. A lot of people around, Lee?
Yeah, there are a lot of people around. Yeah, there are a fair amount of people around. You know, when I was walking to the showers and the crematoria, I was met by a large group of people walking back, and I could see the looks on their faces. And I go, oh boy, you know, they were coming. They were, you know, they were speechless. They were ashen. They were speechless. And I go, oh boy. And I walked through those places and I'm like, I've seen enough. I don't need to see anything more. And one of the reasons I went to Munich on purpose, I wanted to go. I just felt it was my responsibility as a human being to go to Dachau. And I did. Never should that be forgotten. And people should see what human beings and what a government can do without checks and balances, how sideways things can get, unthinkable things can happen. It just sealed whatever, all the things I read, all the things I've watched. It just sealed it. You know, like, here it is. I could have leaned over. They had a large iron wrought chain link fence when you walk through the crematorium. I could have leaned over and touched one of those ovens. I didn't, but I could have. It was right there, right in my eyes. Like I said, I walked through the showers where so many people walked into and never walked out. You really can't put it into words. You really can't.
Thanks, Lee. Appreciate that.
Well, can we change the subject to something lighter?
Yeah, something more positive.
Something lighter to end on. I guess a lot of our listeners might want to know, are there strip clubs everywhere in Munich? Is that a thing? And did you see those women in the traditional German outfits serving you 75-ounce beers and all that stuff?
Yeah, what do they call those, drindles? Is that what the term is? It's drindle or like, I want to say it's spelled D-R-I-N-D-L or it's something like drindle. I could be butchering it. Yeah, there were women there, none that I thought were remotely close to being a St. Pauli girl. Hey, I don't know if you know about St. Pauli girl. St. Pauli girl is an American version of German beer, and they always pick like Pamela Anderson types to be their girl for the year. They have a different girl every year, and they put out a calendar of St. Pauli girl. Pamela Anderson was their St. Pauli girl 1 year. So, no, I didn't see any St. Pauli girl type woman, but none of them that were you like, oh, my God. But, yeah, they were there. They worked the Hofbrauhaus. They had that those designs, those clothes, and the same with Augustiner. And I went to the Augustiner 3 different times, dynamite beer. But, yeah, the girls there are in their brindles, and all but one were, no, you wouldn't want to take them home.
Lee, did you stumble through?
Steve's asking about strip clubs. I didn't even look at strip clubs. I didn't even cross my mind until he just said it. Now, I do know, I'd never been there, but I do know they have brothels in Munich. I know that. I've never been to one, but I know they're there. And it's legal there in Germany. A buddy of mine actually has been to one. That's how I know this.
How close is the brothels to the media hotel?
No clue. I have no idea where they're located. No idea.
Ira's like,
but I do know rail transportation is a big thing in Munich.
Ira's like, I want a Bavarian cream donut, a St. Pauli girl, and her.
I can see Ira waltzing down one of those Bavarian pretzels, those things about the size of your head, with a little bit of butter sauce.
Did you run across a beet salad at the Kemper?
No, but I've had my fill of cabbage for a while.
There you go.
Honest to goodness, every meal I had was some form of cabbage. Oh, it was either the purple cabbage, or it was sauerkraut, or it was coleslaw. And I've had my fill of cabbage. I really have.
Sage,
can you get us out of here, Stevie?
All right, Sage, we're out of here. Thank you, Bucks fans. Thank you, Big Storm Beer. Thank you, Florida's Elite Restoration. And our thanks to presenting sponsor Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford. Go Bucks.